What's up, everybody? I'm your host, Isaac Weisop. You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. Today we're going to talk about Christmas. Yes, everyone's favorite holiday. Except for mine. And it's not because I'm a Grinch. You know, I don't know if you listen to my other podcast, Breaking Social Norms with my wife, Josie. I proved, without a doubt, Thanksgiving is the best holiday of the year. Prove me wrong. And in fact, we're going to, just a plug for Breaking Social Norms, I'm going to do a more lighthearted Christmas special over there. Because today's show of Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture, I'm bringing the heat, as always. This is going to be more informative. Lots of references, lots of sources. We're going to talk about Jesus Christ, the reason of the season. Or is it a pagan myth? Have we all been lied to? Is everything we know a lie? So yes, today we're going to talk about symbolism of Christmas, Christ as a pagan myth, but then we're going to try to talk about some fun symbolism, trees, holly, mistletoe, elf on the shelf, teaching your kids how to worship Satan. That's what they're doing. I don't want to be a sensationalist. But yeah, this show, we got a lot to get into. So if you're looking for like the lighthearted one, like, hey, what's your favorite Christmas movie? That's going to be me and Josie on Breaking Social Norms, available everywhere. It's a fun show. But I know a lot of you, I talk to you as I read your comments. I know a lot of you are like, no, too much Zoo Crew radio over there. So you come over here for the heat. So I'm bringing the heat. I'm going to try to throw some jokes in here and there because it's kind of stuffy on this one. Kind of stuffy. Main idea I want to get across here is Christmas really just a repurposed form of pagan worship of multiple gods from Babylon? Because that's what you'll hear. That's what you hear. The war on Christmas, or is it a war on paganism? Is it Zeitgeistian Gnosticism wrapped up to deceive us? Well, you know, if you read The Golden Bough by Dr. James Frazier, I forget his first name. That's what he'll tell you. He'll tell you that Christmas is just a rewrapped pagan holiday. You played yourself. You played yourself every year. And in fact, I wrote an article about this because I kind of used to espouse that opinion. And I think I've been led down the wrong path with that. I think. I don't know. I'm just giving you the information. You can dig in deeper if you want. I wrote an article on this that showed up in my first book, A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory, The Illuminati, Ancient Aliens, and Pop Culture, which you can get for free. You can get it for free if you go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, go to the Start Here tab, and put your name in the free email newsletter list, and then you'll get an email. You can get it for free. Because I'm always in the spirit of giving. Now, how much shit can I plug today? Coffee mugs. I got coffee mugs. Go to my Gumroad store. Link in the show notes. I got like 12 left or something. What I was saying back then is I kind of espouse that view, right? A struggle of trying to find purpose in the Christmas season. If you come at it from the Christian perspective and you read all this stuff like you watch Zeitgeist or all these atheists on TikTok or YouTube, they're going to sit here and tell you like, oh, you're so stupid. This is just the dying and resurrected God myth of all the pagan religions. And they just took it, you know, because you're so stupid. And even worse yet, it's all about materialism and buying things. It's what keeps the economy going. There's a lot of businesses out there that survive only because they make sales for the Christmas season. I watch Shark Tank, I know. So, you know, and a lot of people they'll crap all over Christmas and be like, oh, it's just a corporate holiday. Oh, which I agree with. Funny enough, I agree with that. I think it's become something that's completely absurd. In fact, there's some funny memes going around. I'm not going to steal the joke and pretend I came up with it, but there's memes out there talking about how it's that time of year where you're going to watch commercials where some crazy spouse buys a brand new car for their other spouse. Which is crazy, right? Like, what? Would you ever buy a car for somebody? I don't know. Maybe that's how the other half lives, you know what I'm saying? You can tell from my wife beater and tattoos, I am not that half, right? We don't buy each other brand new cars as a surprise. Who are these people? Oh, dear. Okay, I'm going to read to you from, let's get into this idea about Christ, okay? I'm going to read you, a lot of the resources for this are going to come from Imam Alauddin Shabazz, who wrote a book called Symbolism, Holidays, Myths, and Signs, all right? I'm going to read you from there. The 25th day of December is accepted now as the date of the supra birth, but such has not always been the case. What date was accepted before? Why was it changed? Who was it that decreed such change? In the case of a festival of such importance and prominence as Christmas to Christians, it is a thing of no light insignificance that the church leaders keep from its people the simple and singular fact that the early Christians celebrated the birth of Jesus for over the first 3.5 centuries on March 25th. That's what he's saying, okay? Now, Imam Shabazz argues that if Christian leaders revealed this insidious truth to the followers, that it would somehow tip the hand that it's really just a pagan holiday, so they can't tell them the truth. Because in the truther world, you've got this camp of people that say Christ is the truth, the light, and everything else is satanic darkness trying to pull us away from him. And then there's also the truthers that say Christ and church and religion is all the biggest oppressive tool ever created to keep you in line. I don't know the truth. I mean, I've got my Christian background, which, you know, informs my worldview. And until I can figure that out someday, I got to stick with it, right? I haven't had any clear guidance one way or another. I'm not one of those privileged folks that have had God show me signs and whisper in my ear. All I know is that I try to do my best to be a good person, take care of other people, animals, the planet, real hippie liberal stuff, right? But I try to be a good person generally. And I feel like I'm blessed in many ways. I've been around a lot of people that have, you know, suffered a lot of things. And for whatever reason, I don't know why, I live a pretty blessed life. You know, one of my best friends growing up died from drug overdose 2 years ago. And there was a definitive point in time where we were on the same path together. And, you know, now I can probably talk about this on another show. We don't want to get in the weeds on it. But for no apparent reason, like, I made the right choice and he, it's not like he made a choice. He was denied the opportunity I was. And I look back on it and think, man, I mean, it was like 20 years later. My homeboy is dead. And, you know, and I live a pretty blessed life. So I don't know who to give thanks to. I give it to Jesus Christ because that's what I was told growing up. But I'm with it, right? I get the truth or argument that religion is, they call it the opiate for the masses, right? Keeps you in line, keeps you in check. But it's a struggle. Anyhow, author Imam Shabazz argues that, we talked about this. But this is where he points to. He says, But the words of the decree issued by the Pope of Christendom, Julian II, in the year 345 AD, are still to be read. They inform the seekers of truth that in that year, he decreed that henceforth, it was fitting that Christians should unite with the followers of Mithra and Bacchus in celebrating the rebirth of the deity under the solar symbolism at the winter solstice. So that's what I'm saying, is a lot of people, including Imam Shabazz, say you played yourself. Christmas was just a holiday set up so that the pagans, particularly in the Roman Empire, who were doing all the naughty, sexy time parties of Saturnalia, which we'll talk about, they wanted to keep doing sexy time parties, and the new religion of Christianity, they were like, how are we going to get these people to, you know, party down with the Christians? How are we going to get them to take on a new religion? I know, let's just make the Saturnalia party the Christmas party. Like, that's what they say. Then, okay, so he's talking about Christ's birth on March 25th, and he alludes to the idea of the pagan vernal equinox, which is March 21st, okay? And what's curious is that I actually read this article recently. On Jay Dyer on Twitter tweeted an article written in November 2017 on intellectualtakeout.org, and it's all about the origins of Christmas and this trend of just saying, oh, it's pagan mythology, which I myself, like I said, have been guilty of entertaining this idea. And again, I don't know. I could be right. I could be wrong. I wasn't there. I'm going to read you from it. According to, this is a Professor William Tighe, T-I-G-H-E. He did a bunch of research. He said December 25th is a date that arose entirely from the efforts of early Latin Christians to determine the historical date of Christ's death. He also goes so far as to claim that the December 25th pagan feast of the birth of the unconquered son was almost certainly an attempt to create a pagan alternative to a date that was already of some significance of Roman Christians. Okay? But he explains more. In the Jewish tradition at the time of Christ, there was a belief in what they called the integral age, that the prophets had died on the same days of their conception or birth. Early Christians spent much energy determining the exact date of Christ's death. Using historical sources, Christians in the first or second century settled on March 25th as the date of his crucifixion. They didn't capitalize the H's in this. They must not be good Christians. You capitalize, when you're referring to God, you capitalize the pronouns. Soon after, March 25th became the accepted date of Christ's conception as well. Add 9 months, the standard term of a pregnancy, to March 25th, and the Christians came up with December 25th as the date of Christ's birth. It is unknown exactly when Christians began formally celebrating December 25th as a feast, but what is known is that the date had no religious significance in the Roman pagan feastal calendar before Aurelian's time. That was the Roman emperor from 270 to 275. I told you this was going to get stuffy. It's getting stuffy real quick, okay? So they're saying there was no festivities, okay? Nor did the cult of the sun play a prominent role in Rome before him. According to Professor Tighe, Aurelian intended the new feast to be a symbol of the hoped-for rebirth or perpetual rejuvenation of the Roman Empire, and if it co-opted the Christian celebration, so much the better. Then it says, Tighe points out the now popular idea that Christians co-opted the pagan feast originates with this guy, Paul Jablonski, 1693 to 1757, who opposed various supposed paganizations of Christianity. And then it says, of course, to Christians, it really doesn't matter that much whether or not they co-opted December 25th from the pagans or vice versa. The Christian faith doesn't stand or fall on that detail. Blase, blase, blah. Okay? Does that clear it up? Probably not. But he's arguing it's the other way around. No, the pagans took it from the birth of Christ, which they point to March 25th as, you know, the conception, and 9 months later, boom, here comes Christ. Now, what's curious, if you go back to Imam Shabazz's book, this goes into some deep territory that's way smarter than I am. But he talks about December 20, because he's of the opinion that, no, it's all pagan nonsense. Okay? And he's like, there's two important days in the pagan mythologies. December 25th as the birth of the sun god, S-U-N. And January 6th as the birth of the son of God, that's S-O-N. Which is all so mad confusing. But I wanted to dig into it because I thought, because this book was written a long time ago. I don't know the exact date. Should I know? Should I look it up for you? Should I tell you? Should I stall? You know, I don't even know the date. It's such a ghetto-ass book. There's no date. Here we go. Let me see. I'm trying to find it for you. But I don't want to take too much time. I don't know. There's no date on the damn thing. It's old. Okay? It's old-timey. Looks like it's from the 80s. But January 6th, of course, being a very important day, if you were around in January 6th, 2021, you know about the insurrection of the Capitol, right? You know what I'm talking about. Highly charged event in Washington, D.C., right by the big phallus of Washington, which will come up later in this show, ironically. Washington's phallus will go up in this show. December 25th, originally conceived as the birth of the other sun god, and originally January 6th was believed to have been the birthday of the son of God. Okay, yeah, we already talked about that. He says that this was because the Pope decreed it as such that the two events will be superimposed, and that the pagan belief of the birth of the sun god, S-U-N, would be changed to become the birth of the son of God, Jesus Christ. Again, pointing to the zeitgeist, Christmas is just a pagan holiday theory. The 6th of January is very important to understand. Between December 25th and January the 6th is a period of 12 days. The number 12 has a profound symbolic meaning. In the Christian world, Epiphany is the 6th of January. Okay? And then to keep it pop culture referenced, the film Angel Heart, starring Robert De Niro, Mickey Rourke, and Lisa Bonet. Lisa Bonet's character, her name is Epiphany, all right? De Niro, I believe his name is Louis Cipher. Lucifer, right? You get it? But if you look up Epiphany, it means to display, manifest, appearance, or coming to light. It's also the incarnation of God or a God in earthly form. Because the plot line of the film is about Lisa Bonet. She's the daughter of Satan. But then Satan makes sexy time with her, played by Mickey Rourke. And they incarnate a new being. You know, the devil is God here in this movie. But it's curious because, and look, this is where things are going to get real dicey on this show right now. A lot, I would say, at least half of you out there think Donald Trump is doing the work of God himself. Elevated to a myth-like status by many people, including those that stormed the Capitol on January 6th. So in some ways, the date of Epiphany was a very curious date that happened. When Trump was on there playing God in a way, saying, look, we're going to take this and you're going to do the bidding. And I'm trying to keep this very neutral so that whether you're pro or anti, either way, you won't be offended. And here's the thing. I'm a truther guy that reads all my comments and messages. And anytime I say stuff about this, about Trump particularly, It's an onslaught of negative messaging, and I don't want that. You know, I don't want that in my life. It's the Christmas season. It's all about brotherly love right now. Now, let's see here. All right. segue over to the Encyclopedia Britannica, referenced by Imam Shabazz. It says, certain Latins, as that sounds very derogatory, doesn't it? I'm talking about the Roman Catholics. Certain Latinxes, no, certain Latins, as early as 354, may have transferred the birthday from January 6th to December 25th, which was then a Mithraic feast, or birthday of the unconquered sun, the sun god, S-U-N. The Syrians and Armenians, who clung to January 6th, accused the Romans of sun worship and idolatry, contending that the feast of December 25th had been invented by disciples of Cerinthius. And like I said, this gets so deep in the weeds, we're not going to bury ourselves, because we're here to have a good time today, all right? I mean, never mind, like, the wind is blowing all the stuff over outside. There's, I don't know, supersonic jets 10 feet above my house. My neighbor saw a UFO. I told you this before. And someone said, aren't you going to finish that story? And I guess I could. I was going to do it on a live stream. There's not much to it. He saw a UFO. He told me about it, and I believe him. He told me, you know, I'm sitting in the front room. It was late at night, and, you know, wifey was in bed, and I'm just chilling. And he had, like, a massage chair thing going on, right? And he says, he saw a meteor crashing. So he gets up, he says, what the hell? And he's an older dude, he's retired. And he walks to the window and he looks outside, he sees this meteor and it stopped. He could see it with his eyes. He said it was close enough he could have shot it with a gun. I mean, Utah, okay? Like, we love guns and freedom here. And he's like, I could have shot it with a gun. Sparking interstellar warfare. But anyway, he said he saw the ass end of this thing and it had lights on it. And he said they were like glowing. They weren't like bright lights. They were like glowing lights. And it sat there for a second. And then he said it just took off as fast as it came down. And I believe him, man. Like, he's not sensational or crazy. So yeah, that's the story. Do with it what you will. Anyhow, Christmas. The term Christmas, he argues that you break it down, Christ, obviously, Jesus Christ, but Mas, M-A-S, is from the Egyptian word M-E-S, which means to be born. So it's literally the birth of Christ. So when people get outraged about, oh, they're trying to take the Christ out of Christmas, it's like, well, you can't really. You'd have to rename it. And I guess maybe that is where they say there's a war on the thing, because you can't say the Christmas word sometimes, is what they claim. I think it's just outrage that they're trying to sell. In fact, I got a great quote for you. I just referenced it the other day. It's very applicable here. It was from, I think Mari Terry said it. Yeah, Mari Terry said this. Facts don't sell newspapers. Right? Are people really outraged? Do they really get mad when you say Merry Christmas? I've never noticed that in my life. I'm not saying it never happens, but I think that this idea that there's this epidemic of people getting offended by this term is something that the news is trying to get you outraged about and spark debate. And, you know, in some ways they create culture by doing this stuff, because they want to plant that seed of, like, you know, oh, you know what? Maybe I should be offended when people say Merry Christmas. And then, like, people do get offended, I guess. I don't know. I think that's craziness. I don't think anyone's doing that. Just my opinion. So anyways, the author, Imam Shabazz, he's so sure this is a pagan holiday, he cites the Catholic Encyclopedia 1911 edition. I lost my copy. But it was published by the church. And it says, Christmas was not among the earliest festivals of the church. The first evidence of the feast is from Egypt. Pagan customs centering around the January calends? It must be a typo. Gravitated to Christmas. Must be January calendar. Okay. He also cites the Encyclopedia Britannica, 1946 edition. I also lost that one at the same time. Saying the exact same thing, claiming the Roman Catholic Church only made this religion up in the 5th century. And we're going to come back to this here in a bit. We're going to talk about Christmas trees. Trying to keep this light here. Very difficult. When you look at the time period, December 21st to the 25th, there were these pagan celebrations. They called it Yule or Saturnalia or the Winter Solstice. And that's where a lot of people get this idea, myself included, that Christmas was, in fact, just lumped into that same period for ease of transition to smooth it out. Because no one wants to give up their parties and sexy time. The pagan festival referred to as Yule was, of course, celebrated around the winter solstice from December 21st to the 23rd. And this is an idea you'll see on Zeitgeist if you ever watch that. The sun is at its lowest altitude. In fact, I think Jordan Maxwell talks about this. The sun is at its lowest altitude in the, what they call it, the Southern Cross, when you chart the sun's movement. And it begins its trek to rise higher again, closer to, the equinox and then the summer solstice, when it's at peak power. You know, that's why the daylight gets shorter and shorter up to December 21st. That's when the sun is at the lowest point, and it's symbolically dead. It goes underground. It's being buried so it can be resurrected 3 days later. It stays at the lowest point for 3 days, then starts coming back to strength. And, of course, that's why in the middle of summer, you get the longest day of sunlight of the year, because it's just a cyclical thing, right? The rising sun is believed to be symbolic of the acceptance of sacrifices provided on Samhain. That's why they did all the sacrifices around Halloween, supposedly. And this other pagan festival known as Yule was supposedly merged into the Christian holiday of Christmas. When talking about Saturnalia, it's, again, a festival over several days in honor to the god, the deity of Saturn, a.k.a. Kronos. And that's where all the feasts, the gift-giving, it all ties into that Saturnalia festival. And you can read much more about that in A Grand Unified Conspiracy Theory. We talk about Saturn worship and all that stuff. Again, you can get it for free on IlluminatiWatcher.com. Go to the Start Here tab, sign up for the free email newsletter, and you're in. And what's the free email newsletter? Well, I used to write more. Lately, it's just been like, hey, here's a new show notifications, book sales, stuff like that. New merch. I got new shirts coming in. I got 70s Ringer Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture shirts, and they're lovely. In fact, maybe if I remember, I'll put a picture on Instagram of the proof. It's not the final product. Colors are a little off. Like I said, I'm pretty anal about these shirts. I spend way more time and money on them than you can believe. And I'm almost out of my other traditional shirt, the Stay Woke on the back. But you can get all those on Gumroad. But there's a new 70s Ringer shirt coming out soon. I told you know what? it's fitting that this is a Christmas show. I'm trying to sell you products. I don't even care, to be honest. Because I'm not into material things. I'm so based. Isn't that what they say? Based. Saturnalia. Why are we talking about it? Well, it ran from December 17th to the 23rd, and supposedly they would have gladiator battles, human sacrifices, deaths to the deity of Saturn. This is also where the idea of role reversal comes in, where the masters would feed the slaves, which is a tradition you get at dreaded day jobs, such as mine. At the dreaded day job, the workplace throws you a Christmas dinner, and the bosses and your supervisors are feeding you the food. the masters are feeding the slaves. It's a role reversal. We still do it. The Romans also had the birthday of the unconquered sun on December 25th, Sol Invictus, as the Roman god of the sun. And this will go into some Nimrod Semiramis talk, which we're going to get into in a bit. And supposedly Sol Invictus is the same as the Statue of Liberty, with the rays of the sun coming off the headdress. They would write verses, poetry, because that was like entertainment back in the day. You know, when you don't have TV and social media, you would have like a jester or a poet would write verses on the gifts at Saturnalia, and that's what turned into the greeting cards, supposedly. Imam Shabazz says that the greeting cards were from something else. I don't remember. I should have wrote that down. But the feast, they were conducted in order to honor the upcoming famine of January to April, right? Because like in the fall, you have the big autumn harvest. You're grubbing down real good. Thanksgiving, you're grubbing down even better. Christmas, you get the one last blowout, and then it's hang on tight because people are dying. We're talking about old timey stuff, right? They even say cookies that were shaped as humans were eaten during Saturnalia. This is where your gingerbread men come from. Because again, it was like human sacrifice in gladiator battles. They would sacrifice humans to these pagan gods. They would also be singing in the streets, because again, it's just a crazy debauchery party. It's like Mardi Gras for the pagans. That's where the caroling comes from. And then, again, December 25th, there's theories that Julius Caesar resynced the calendar to be to coincide with the solar worship, to try to convert more pagans to Christianity. Now, let's talk about some of the familiar items from Christmas. Trees. Christmas trees. You see Christmas trees at church? You do not. You do not. Well, maybe you do. You shouldn't. The Bible, Book of Jeremiah, says to not learn the ways of the heathens. That's where a lot of this sort of prude condemnation about stuff goes, because it says it right in the Bible. Don't learn the ways of the heathen, the pagans, the occultists. And that includes the tree. I'm going to read you from Jeremiah 10, verses 2 through 4. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. For the customs of the people are vain. For one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workmen with the axe. They deck it with silver and with gold. They fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it move not. They're talking about a Christmas tree. They tell you in the Bible, don't do it, bro. Don't do it. I don't know if you guys watch MTV's The Challenge. That's my Nelson voice. Don't do it, bro. It's always so intense. Now, supposedly the people referred to in the Book of Jeremiah, they would also put candles on it. Cakes. That's where the candy cane tradition comes from. Man, can you imagine a tree with cakes on it? Ooh, like petit fours maybe? Ooh, baby. Now we're talking. And then we talk a little, should we get into Nimrod? I think we're going to have to get into Nimrod. Now, okay. If you go back to Imam Shabazz's book, he talks about the roots of paganism in Babylon, okay? There's this myth, this mythology of this god, this deity named Nimrod. And Nimrod married his mother. He was so evil, he married his mother. And when he died, and I'm grotesquely simplifying this, because nobody cares. When Nimrod died, his mother slash wife was so upset. She saw a dead tree stump, and from that dead tree stump, an evergreen started to grow, symbolizing new life, the rebirth. So she would visit this tree every year on Nimrod's birthday. And guess when Nimrod's birthday was? December 25th. Nimrod was the false messiah. He was the son of Baal, the sun god, S-U-N, Baal, a.k.a. Moloch sometimes. Is what they say, the bull god. And this is one of many tales of a mother-son immaculate conception. And this is where you get into the Zeitgeist movie, if you've seen Zeitgeist, where they talk about the same story over and over with the gods. In Egypt, it was Isis and Horus. And all these ideas went into Christianity with Madonna and Jesus Christ, a.k.a. the Theotokos, the Virgin Mother, Mary, and Christ. But let's look at it. This is supposedly from the Chaldean Mysteries. But if you go to the Zeitgeist movie, you can watch the clip on YouTube, because they'll let the pagan stuff fly all day on YouTube. But Zeitgeist, they portrayed all these gods, Krishna, Mithras, Dionysus, a couple more, saying that, look, these are all just the same story. It's a death and resurrection myth. You know, they're all the same, and they rattle off all this stuff. They're like, oh, they all do the same thing. Born of a virgin, 12 disciples, he was a carpenter, born on December 25th, died and resurrected 3 days later, referred to as the Messiah, referred to as the Lamb. They'll rattle off a million things. You're like, well, damn, you get done watching it, and you're like, damn, we've been lied to. I played myself. Well, if you, to fight YouTube battle with YouTube battle, Stephen Bankars, who's a guy that I was just looking around, because I used to have a Zeitgeist, this is what's crazy, I used to have a Zeitgeist debunking guide. It was like this long, very well thought out PDF, and I found it via Google. It was like the first thing to pop up, and wouldn't you know it, I searched for it because I didn't have a copy anymore. Couldn't find it. Didn't exist. Gee, wonder why. You know, Google shadow banned me a long time ago. They're really battling, and even Facebook's in trouble. They're saying, oh, fact checks are just opinions. Yeah, no shit. Like, we know you guys are inserting your opinion of the worldview of what you want us to look like. But I'm trying to keep it Christmassy. Let's not get into that. I searched around, and ironically, a video by Stephen Bankars came up, and I used to watch some Stephen Bankars videos. He was a New Age guy who turned into a Christian, okay? There's a video he's got called Zeitgeist Debunked. And he claims that Mithras, the cult of Mithras, right, which we've talked about with Raised by Wolves. I did 3 episodes on the show Raised by Wolves because it's all about the Mithraic cult. It's a pretty good show, too. Pretty good show. I recommend it. I don't highly recommend it, but I recommend it. It's kind of along those vibes. But the story of Mithras, there's no talk about a virgin birth. So Zeitgeist is clearly wrong. And Stephen Bankers is correct. Mithras is born from a rock. And this is all metaphor. There's no proof there's a real Mithras. There was no mother. There was no virgin birth. He was born from a rock. It's clear as day. If you do 2 seconds of research, you'll find that. So Zeitgeist and all these atheists with their nonsense, they're just so wrong in so many ways. He was never crucified. He never died. There was no burial. There was no resurrection. Debunked. Dionysus, born from Zeus having sex with Semele. I don't know. It was in Hesiod's Theogony book. Dionysus, when he died, was torn into pieces, but then reassembled and then ascended to heaven. So pretty similar, right? Bankars tells us, yeah, but this was written in 248 AD. So they took the story of Christ and retroactively made it the story of Dionysus. Horus. There was no virgin birth. I've talked about the story of Horus many times because this comes up often. They have this death and resurrection story of their Messiah. You'll recall the story is that Osiris and Set were brothers. I mean, there's different variations of it. Set kills Osiris. Osiris is married to Isis, right? And Osiris gets ripped into a bunch of pieces. I think it's 13 pieces. Thrown all over the place. Isis, she's so sad. She goes around, she collects all the pieces. She finds all but one. Some would argue the most important one. The phallus. So using magic, she puts a golden obelisk in place of the phallus and has sexy time with Osiris and creates Horus. So kind of, sort of, an immaculate conception? Kind of. I mean, it's in the ballpark, right? But they make it sound like it's the same exact story. And then on top of that, Horus was never crucified. He didn't die for man's sins. They don't even know if he died. There's no mention of it. So he definitely wasn't resurrected. I mean, there's similarities there. I'll give you that. But they act like it's just a stolen story, and it couldn't be more wrong. They also cite Dr. J.Z. Smith, not to be confused with J.Z. Sean Carter. Dr. J.Z. Smith from the Encyclopedia of Religion. Again, lost my copy. 1987. Just kidding, I was playing with He-Man back then. But 1987, Volume 3, page 521, says this. The category of dying and rising gods, once a major topic of scholarly investigation, must now be understood to have been largely a misnomer based on imaginative reconstructions and exceedingly late or highly ambiguous texts. There is no unambiguous instance in the history of religions of a dying and rising entity. Deity, sorry. I was doing so good, too. There's no unambiguous instance in the history of religions of a dying and rising deity. Then they say pretty much all academic scholars agree that Jesus Christ existed on this earth as a real person, a god, versus all these other gods that Zeitgeist is rattling off, which are just myths. There's no proof any of those things existed. They refer to a lot of non-biblical sources that undoubtedly prove that Christ not only existed, but was killed on a cross, crucified for your sins. Just wants you to love him and love one another. That's all he wants. Capital H, he, him. The death and baptism was not plagiarized from older mythologies of paganism. Even atheist experts mostly agree that disciples... the 12 disciples, when Christ died, the story goes, he died, buried in a tomb in a cave, resurrected 3 days later, boom. And the disciples, they knew it. Either he came and visited them or whatever. And even the scholars, even the atheist scholars looking at all these various sources said, you know what? Like, I don't know if Jesus Christ was really God and was resurrected from the dead, but for sure, the disciples saw something that made them believe that, no doubt. They reference Paul, who was a Jewish Pharisee, who was executing Christians, but he changed side because something made him believe this. Because he saw it with his own eyes. Now, the Christmas tree. Back to the Christmas tree. Oh, dear. That's the origin of the Christmas tree. We talk about the Rockefeller tree in New York around the ice rink, you know, the famous one. Would you ever notice what's behind the tree? It's the statue of Prometheus, the light bearer, Lucifer, Robert De Niro from Angel Heart, stealing fire from the gods to give to mankind, technology. Given to Mark Zuckerberg, who's going to make the metaverse, right? This is what they want. Technology from the gods, from Prometheus, from Lucifer, so that they can create their own perfected world. The metaverse, yes. The Yule log. That old Yule log, you know? Always symbolic of Christmas. But anything with Yule in it is referring to the pagan holiday, yes. A night of human sacrifice. And the Yule log was traditionally made from birch. And you would keep a piece of it burning all year round until the next Christmas. Kind of like the Olympic torch, sort of. I mean, they don't keep that all year round, but you know what I'm saying. they take the Olympic torch and they light it in Greece and make sure it makes it all the way to the location of the Olympic Games without going out. They even send it up into space. But they would keep it alive, symbolizing the reincarnation of the death and riot and resurrected God. Mistletoe. An interesting one. The berries on it are poisonous, but supposedly it's symbolic of the sun and its healing powers. So don't ask me. But it was a fertility plant for the druids. That's why they would kiss beneath it. The wreath, the circular wreath, a fertility symbol. Because you know what the circle symbolizes, right? The yoni, the sacred feminine. You know what I'm saying? The circle of life. I'm of course talking about the vagina. And the candle in the center of the wreath is symbolic of the phallic counterbalance of man. The golden obelisk of Osiris, the same obelisk of Washington Monument that on January 6th, they were doing the little insurrection thing right near it, which we talked earlier. It's the day of Epiphany, the day of the God incarnating before us, manifesting himself. There is, and you'll see this at the Vatican in St. Peter's Square. They've got this 4,000-year-old Egyptian obelisk with a circle around it. Again, the male and female thing. It was actually moved from Egypt to Rome, which, you know, Rome, right? That's where all this pagan talk comes from. And there's a lot of critiques about it because this thing, this obelisk, witnessed countless deaths of Christians back in the day when it wasn't acceptable. So it's kind of weird that they moved it to the Vatican. We're almost done. We got two more topics. Santa Claus and holly, right? We talked about mistletoe already, but holly used by the druids to hang in the windows to keep evil spirits away. It was considered the sacred plant of Saturn. Again, referenced and used during the Roman Saturnalia festival, where they would decorate images of the god Saturn. Yeah. And also considered a sacred fertility symbol, male fertility with that, right? Whereas the ivy represents the female fertility. Now, the Holly King and Santa Claus, this one's interesting. There's this, the Holly King, a mythology of paganism, who, look, and Santa Claus, you could go a million directions with Santa Claus. Santa Claus is basically a amalgamation of a bunch of ideas. So it's hard to be like, oh, Santa Claus is purely satanic. I mean, there's St. Nicholas, the Christian, who gave presents to a poor person's kids. But anyway, Holly King is one of the origin stories of Santa Claus. And he had an enemy, the Oak King, right? And the two would battle. The Holly King and the Oak King would battle. But the Holly King was strongest during the winter solstice at Christmas time, December 21st. All right. And like Holly King, Santa Claus is all knowing. They both have this knowledge of what's going on. Who's been good? Who's been bad? They have this omnipresent power. They could traverse the planet in one night, both of them. They had reindeer, and the reindeer, of course, is the stag god, of course, paganism. The stag god is Nimrod as well. Finally, the elves. Let's talk about the elf on the shelf. Because elves, these things were originally creatures of magic. Okay? The demonic, ugly little things. They used to call them hell devils or orcs. They would draw pentagrams to keep these elves away in the Scandinavian territories. During the late 1500s, elves became synonymous with fairies, and then, you know, it morphed into what we know of elves today. Will Ferrell, obviously. And there's this thing called Elf on the Shelf, which is only, you know, more recent, last, I don't know, 15, 20 years, I think, became popular. And the parent, if you don't, you know, I didn't do this growing up, and I don't have kids. Me and Josie don't have kids, so I'm not very familiar with the Elf on the Shelf, but from what I understand, the parents hide the elf throughout the house, and the elf is supposed to watch the kids. It's kind of like Santa Claus. They're going to watch and see if they're naughty or nice and report straight to the big dog. Now, there's this research paper. I'm going to pull up the name. It's called Who's the Boss by policyalternatives.ca. It's about the elf on the shelf and the normalization of surveillance. What a great idea. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but it basically is saying that kids are participating in a game with a prescribed set of rules. However, in normal games, like non-elf on the shelf games, the child role plays a character, right? The child mentally is like, oh, I'm in this imaginary world playing this imaginary character. Not Elf on the Shelf. Elf on the Shelf is real world. Right? It's different. There's a distinction between playtime and real life to be had with most games, but not Elf on the Shelf. Elf on the Shelf, like, that's some real action going down right there. Kind of similar to the way that when you believe in Santa Claus, you get the gifts. Okay? It's kind of like magical thinking manifests itself into reality. So then it talks about all the roles. It says, you know, about the doll, like, you can't touch it and all this stuff. It says this is different from more conventional play with dolls, where children create play worlds born of their imagination, moving dolls, and determining interactions with other people and other dolls. Rather, the hands-off play demanded by the elf is limited to finding but not touching. The elf on the shelf every morning, an acquiescence to surveillance during waking hours under the elf's watchful eye. The elf on the shelf controls all parameters of play, who can do and touch what, and ultimately attempts to dictate the child's behavior outside of time used for play. And the article keeps going. It's saying that this concept was used in prisons. It says the gaze of the elf on the the gaze of the elf on the child's real world, as opposed to the play world, resonates with the purpose of the panopticon, based on Jeremy Bentham's 18th century design for a model prison, a central tower in a circular structure surrounded by cells. Backlighting in the central tower made it impossible for prisoners to discern whether or not they were being watched. Michael Foucault saw the panopticon as a perfect symbol of modern surveillance societies, a metaphor for discipline operating through a variety of social and institutional apparatuses that leave the individual on guard, never certain if she is actually being watched, but knowing structures are in place to monitor her movements at all times. What do you think about that? Look, I'm not saying the Elf on the Shelf is a Chinese communist game, like the Chinese social credit, the social credit score, an eye on you at all times, making sure you're doing what you're supposed to do so you can keep your score elevated. But it is. So in conclusion, we're talking about all this stuff. Does it matter? Does it matter? Is Santa Claus really just the devil? Is Santa Claus Satan Claus? We didn't even go into, there's like Sinterklaas, the Black Peter conspiracy, and all this stuff. Old Nick as a reference to the devil. But it's hard to know. And like I said, Santa Claus is an amalgamation of a ton of different ideas. It's, to me, it's, what does it represent to you? That's what it comes down to. I'm not here to destroy Christmas. Come on, what kind of heartless monster do you think I am? Because I subscribe to how the Bible, it tells us to live in the world, but try not to be of the world. you want to get some gifts and give some gifts, that's great. But like, don't become consumed with it. Don't become consumed with greed. Is Christmas based on a pagan myth? Well, we just proved to you, not really. But even if it was, what does it change? Even if you're atheist and you don't believe in Christ, the holiday of Christmas can still be great. It can still be centered around love. You focus on your family, your friends, maybe. Maybe you don't like your family. You want to hang out with your friends a little bit. Maybe you don't like people. Hang out with your dogs. Maybe you got some NFTs, some turtle NFTs. I don't know. But you're trying to connect, right? Try to connect with the source of love. Some people focus more on church. But the whole idea is like, there's more important things in life than just working and trying to find these materialistic needs to be fulfilled. We're not monks, right? We're not nuns. We're just trying to figure out how to do the right thing. So yeah, what should you do this year? Don't argue with your family about it. They don't want to hear this anyway. Maybe send them a link to the podcast. So get together with your family. Try to make some good memories, right? Because we don't know who's all going to be here for the next one. Try not to fight about politics or what kind of health choices they're making. Try to make the world a better place for a day. Right? We all fall short of the glory of God. But you know what? We're all going to die someday. None of it matters. You just try to enjoy it one day at a time. Enjoy life. Maybe you're one of those dying and resurrected gods. Who knows? Or maybe you're Mark Zuckerberg and you're going to live immortally in the metaverse. That's what they want. So there you go. That's the breakdown of Christmas. I'll try to make it fun for you. I hope you had a good time like I did. Thanks for listening to the show. I'm still running that deal. If you want to get rid of the ads and support the show, go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, hit the VIP link. I'm going to tell you all the details. Use the promo code NOMORELOSER and $2 a month for 2 months. I'll give it to you. What a deal. What a guy. All right. Thanks for listening. And until next time, stay woke.